Thank you all for coming to this En Conjunto table talk. Today our guest is Professor, Reverend Professor Hector Hoppe from Argentina. He's also a senior editor for CPH for multilingual resources. He has contributed significantly to the publication of manuscripts in the Spanish language. From the Lutheran tradition, and so it's a joy to have him here with us. He also teaches our students at the Center for Hispanic Studies, and we're very glad to have him share with us some thoughts, some theological reflections from his own experience and his own study of Scripture. So why don't we welcome him to our campus.
Thank you. And just to make everything happen accordingly to plan, we have hour and a half or so, right? Mm-hmm. My plan is to use the Bible to as a startup point for the theme today, and I don't know if you announced it or not. Was it announced? Can I hear how it was announced so I don't bring another theme?
I think we talked about biblical themes on crossing borders.
I have two Bible passages that we can go through and get some reflection. We will go through it at least 2-1. We will see how our time goes for us. I'll go with one, and then the main point will be to discuss where we are at and what are the things that we can do to be able to cross the border and to do God's ministry in a better way than we are doing it right now. So if you want to open your Bible in Matthew chapter 15, a very well-known story, but we will read it. Starting on verse 21. So that's Matthew chapter 15, starting with verse 21. The faith of the Canaanite woman, up to 28, and I'll invite anyone who has an English Bible to read it, please. It's Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 to 28.
And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, "Send her away, for she is crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered, "It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "O woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire." And her daughter was healed instantly.
Thank you. It's a move that Jesus does from where he was to across the border. Now, I would like you to think about how many borders Jesus crossed at that time. Mark adds a little bit of information saying that Jesus went there in secret, possibly to a friend's house where this woman found him. So he was trying to hide like many times he did, just to maybe rest, or maybe he had something else in mind. But he left the national border for some reason. What are the other borders that he crossed besides the national border? Yeah.
The cultural?
Cultural border? What was she?
She was Canaanite.
She was Canaanite?
And she was a woman.
And she was a woman? And what do you see on the other side of the border? What was the encounter here? What happened on the other side of the border? Something unusual? If you describe the woman, just try to fix your eyes on her and describe her. What was she going through? A lot of pain because of somebody that she loved was in pain. The point here is to learn that on the other side of our borders, people suffer the same things we do. There is no difference in what happens to people in this side of the border or on the other side of the border. I think Jesus crossed a lot of borders. His first time when he left Bethlehem, he crossed the border, you know, political barriers, when he was 2 years old and he find asylum in Egypt as a refugee, as an illegal immigrant, I would say. And then he was called back to his country. But here he crossed national borders, language, cultural, social borders. A lot of things happened here. And we need to think about this because in our age and in our place, we will have to do that. And just keep that in the back of your mind because we are going to talk about this.
Maybe there's also an economic border because Tyre and Sidon would be ports. Maybe resort areas. People go to the beach, spend the weekend at the beaches on the Mediterranean. So maybe that economic also, with their ports. So it's a different city than like the city of Capernaum.
Yeah. What do you know about Capernaum? 350 people. 70 families. One well. Up in the mountains. Remember Nathaniel's stories. What good can it come from Nazareth, I mean. You know, just very little thing. So he goes where the action is there, right? Mm-hmm. Let's focus a little bit on her because this is something that we will encounter in our days. She is in pain. What does she do? Jeff Gibbs in the commentary to Mark says that the Greek text says that he was constantly, annoyingly calling after Jesus. This is what she does, just annoying. Think about the disciples, she's annoying us, get rid of her. Right? So think about the disciples, whom do they represent here? Who are they? Jews? Called people from God? Or by God? Following Jesus? And now here, they find somebody who annoys them, they don't do anything. You see that the text doesn't say that they are doing anything. They don't do anything. The only thing that they do is to ask Jesus, they ask God to take an action, and they say what they have to do. I mean, here is the church, the called ones, saying God what to do. Get rid of her. It's just so pitiful. Look at Jesus' behavior here. What is he doing? What does he do when the disciples say that?
Keep quiet.
Did he say that? He didn't say a thing.
He did not answer a word.
It was not worth it to enter in a dialogue with them. That's what I understand. He does enter a dialogue with a woman. I see a progression in Jesus here that I can mention with a woman. First, Jesus is silence. And we need to understand that silence means something when he is silent. Then, he has some hard words for her. Then, harder words. Then, he sees faith, and he brings grace into it. That's the pattern that you see. But to the disciples, there is nothing. There's nothing there. I would like to open the dialogue now, and I would like you to see where you are at right now. We are in a church. We have been called. We follow Jesus. We cross borders because we go where he goes. Even if we don't understand why he went there to that friend's house in Tyre and in Sidon. But we go. What do we find outside the borders of our place? Or maybe one of you can define what are your borders? What are the borders where you feel yourself comfortable? That you don't want to give away or you don't want to leave. Think about the United States and the borders that we have and how tight we keep those borders secure because we don't want invaders to come in and we don't, and when we leave the kosher zone, the secure zone, we take all the precautions and all this. So borders are really borders. They are huge. They are big. And when we go out, what do we find? Where can we talk a little bit about these borders that we have? Emotional borders. And, we keep our emotional borders as Americans very tight. We don't want to talk about some things. And you don't ask me too many questions. It's individualistic. I'm good in my society. Now here, we have somebody who left the border, went to a different place. Let's talk about what we can find, what the church's reaction is, what is God's role in this. Where do we see ourselves here? Too many questions?
That's good.
Borders always represent some level of anxiety when you approach them or when you think about crossing them. Mm-hmm.
And how do we see our mission, our ministry as a church breaking those borders and going through those borders? How do we see mm-hmm. ourselves there?
I think that's a challenge because typically, I think the reason why crossing any kind of border, however that's constructed, whether it's geopolitically or culturally or linguistically, what makes it such an anxious experience is that you're going sort of into the unknown, something that you're not used to. And I think in the church, as in our own cultures, we tend to operate with what is comfortable to us. And some of it because that's the space that we have been given to serve our neighbor. The problem is when that becomes sort of an obstacle to engage someone who is different. And I think we don't tend to see borders as, whether that's socially defined or geopolitically, as places of encounter where we kind of exchange, we can share some of our pain from this side and from that side, some of our culture, some of our language, and then maybe mutually learn something from one another. We don't tend to see that, and that could be a problem. Talk about the mission of the church. The Missouri Synod's history is that it's, primarily an ethnic-based church. And over time, it had to adapt to the English language and culture and so on. And now I think we're kind of in a similar situation because we're going into a time when, demographically speaking, we will become a nation that is in the majority multi-ethnic. So the Anglo cultures will not be the majority. So whether we want to cross a border or not, we're being crossed by one. And we find ourselves in this kind of situation where he's uncomfortable.
Exactly. I thought about that word too. I feel uncomfortable. They are annoying. Think about this woman. She keeps shouting, crying after us What does she want? Help.
Mm-hmm.
She needed help. And that annoyed the disciples. Think
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about so many immigrants here, or when we go out, they look for us because we are with Jesus. We cannot avoid us. I mean, we are the called ones. They look for us because they need help. Whatever help that is, they won't come to you say, I want to be ministered in the word. You know, it may be possible. But actually, they have a son or a daughter that is sick, and they don't know what to do. So they ask for help. This is one thing that we need to see, and I think it's pretty colorful, the text, to see Jesus mm-hmm. interacting and the disciples interacting outside their borders. And sometimes we don't know what to do with these people mm-hmm. that are on our back just crying for help.
Mm-hmm.
I think something else may happen, and that is that each of us, to some degree, have a picture of how God is with us and for us. And when we're placed in a different situation and somebody else calls out to that same God, it doesn't necessarily fit the same picture that we have of God. That makes us uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. and we may not even know what to do, so the best thing is to ignore it or tell it to go away or to pretend that it'll go away mm-hmm. if we don't pay attention to it.
There's Mark, another dynamic yes. at play that is sort of interesting, too. So when you cross a border, instantly you become the outsider. You're no longer in your own context where you can manage your environment the way that you learned to throughout the years. But now you're somewhere where you become the different one, where people can come to you. When I was a little boy, my dad and I would cross into Mexico all the time, and instantly you'd have the little kids coming to ask for money and those sorts of things. You become sort of the outsider, the part of the wonder district. Mission trip to San Lorenzo, couldn't walk down the streets of the little village without everybody knowing that you were not from there. You dress different, you look different, you talk different. So that becomes a source of anxiety. And I'm not so certain that the disciples just didn't respond in a very human way. Now they're being defensive, now they're trying to protect their identity, now they don't know how to function in this context.
I would say more your last sentence, they didn't know how to do it. It takes a while to understand how to deal with or in a different environment and with different situations. What do we do with it? We don't know how to do it. And then we tell God how to handle it when actually He knows better.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I read this passage, and I read it often, it's so powerful, that when we go out on a mission, and we don't need to pass the national border, we just leave our neighborhood, or even inside our neighborhood, we'll find all these different people around us. I find that the church won't come with me. The church are more just like the disciples sometimes. They don't know what to do. And it's annoying to them, you know. Why spend time and money and effort in things that doesn't pertain to the word? Now, Jesus' answer here is just amazing. He's giving His grace to somebody who knew about Jesus. He looked for help for a child that was demon possessed, but she had faith, and Jesus discovered that. And maybe this is some of the things that we need to point out here for us to help. When they cry for help, when the foreigners, the strangers, the immigrants, the people from other cultures, being them Hispanics or whoever, they cry for help, they are looking in faith. Their faith is not, maybe it's not yet a gift of God. It's not the faith that will save them. But they are looking in their own faith, human faith, for the help that they know the church can give. Was the language a barrier here?
Not necessarily.
It's just incredible that the Bible never talks about barriers in language. Right? Well, at least I didn't find it. You know. And if there were some Greeks that wanted to see Jesus, they found somebody who was bilingual, Aramaic and Greek, and took him to see Jesus. But here, there's nothing said that, you know, hey, we don't understand. No, language was never a barrier. Language is not a border so hard to cross. Which is the hardest border to cross for us?
Like was mentioned before, the border that takes us out where we're comfortable. That's the border.
Yeah, and this is a question that I address to you, but it's for everybody. What is what makes us so comfortable that we don't want to go out? What is it? Fear of rejection.
Yeah, no.
Who can reject us?
Jesus.
What is the hardest thing for us to do in crossing the border? What is something that we would like to have and we don't have now to cross the border with all confidence and do mission work?
The magic formula.
Cool, yeah. That would be one thing. How do I do it?
The way that's going, this is what I think.
How's it going to happen, huh?
How my vicarage, my church members, they wanted the magic formula that was going to make someone a Christian.
In 3 years.
So I'm waiting for that, magic outline that I can use so that they can become a Christian. I don't want to just mess around with some of this other stuff and try this. I just want, tell me exactly how it's done and let's just do it.
What do we learn from that? Are we overcoming the real need of the people? Yeah, she came crying for help. She was in real, real pain. It was real pain.
Yeah, well, when we miss, when we're looking for the perfect model, is the neighbor. So in other words, the neighbor should be the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to meet the neighbor wherever the neighbor is at. The neighbor is not supposed to come and try to meet me at where I am. I think the disciples were sort of waiting for that. You know.
Well, in this case, there is another picture. Jesus was possibly inside a house. And the disciples around. That's the way I see it. And the woman comes to us. She comes to us. And we have the church around.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's so annoying? You know?
The church.
And the church won't open the door. Won't open the door. And, you know, we can have multiple examples of this. And it is not our task just to criticize what's going on, but to find doors that we can open in confidence, and cross the border and help these people that are in such need.
I would say too that in this situation, they went to these cities. They weren't in one place and waited for her to come to them. You know, there was a meeting place of them. And it was in the sense where, you know, they put themselves out there to where she found them. So with the church even, going to places, crossing borders into places where people can actually reach you. Instead of having that mentality, we're here, let's wait for them to come. You know.
And be like us.
Yes.
It's not one of us, right? The disciples. So.
Uh-huh. Right.
I mean, in Luther's exposition of that text, he says even before Christ or the disciples crossed the border, the word had crossed the border. Because otherwise she wouldn't have known about Jesus. I mean, the word had impacted her, and she came because from somebody or some way she heard the word.
Absolutely. And this is a great point because we do not know what's going on outside the border. We do not know if they know about Jesus or not. I had a Bible study in class about this passage not long ago, and I started saying, I'll start the sentence and you finish it. What happens in Vegas
stays in Vegas.
And what happens in Judea, if Jesus is around, doesn't stay. What happens in Jerusalem, what happens in my heart, if Jesus is around, it does not stay there. And this is the point that Rudy is talking here about Luther. The word crossed the border, and we never know where the word is working. This I know. We are called by Jesus, and we take him wherever we go. If he is true in our heart, people will know. He won't stay in my heart. If Jesus is around, he won't stay there, and people will know. And we will be annoyed by people coming to us for different reasons. We will think that it is not the right reason. But I just translated a Bible study from Dr. Kishnick, a long Bible study, about 12 pages. He had some great points in it. And one thing he said was, he calls it the divine appointment. And I think about that. I think Jesus had an appointment. God set up an appointment with Jesus and the disciples and this woman. We don't know about the times, we don't know about the places, but we know that he is around, Jesus is around, and he will touch people. How can this passage help us overcome some of the things? Like you mentioned, the formula. What is the other formula that we need? What is that will make us comfortable in leaving our zone and go to wherever God calls us and meet with people.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just thinking faith. Because when I go to a place where I'm not comfortable, or I'm outside of my comfort zone, I know that I can't look to myself for the answer. Okay. It's only through advice that, you know, it actually helps me to depend on him more.
So we need to do like the disciples and go to Jesus, but with a different approach and not tell God what to do, but, you know, like she did, she fell on her knees.
I think there's a dynamic here too. Think of ourselves. When we feel uncomfortable around somebody, we don't look them in the eye. We look away. We may say something indirectly, you know. Somebody's sitting over there, and we look over here and say it, but we don't dare look at them in their eye because we feel that they feel very uncomfortable. And I have a hunch that the disciples said this vos populi, out loud, and they weren't looking at the woman. They weren't seeing her, or even for an instant looking into her eye and seeing the pain in her eye. And then Jesus turns around and behaves just like the disciples, almost like to say, gentlemen, do you know what you're actually doing to this woman? It's like this when he goes into this. You know, well, she's not important. Actually, those words aren't for her. I think they're for the disciples because they don't even look to her and say, excuse me, you know, we're on our trip to the beach. This is a secret trip. Jesus is here to rest. You know, could you come back tomorrow? We'll certainly, you know, take care of you tomorrow. It's just like, would you get rid of her? And they don't even look at her. That's my sense. That fear of associating, relating to, asking her name, where do you come from, what do you need, it's just turning away from.
So we need to be open to change plans when we go to the beach. Just be open, because if we take Jesus with us, something will happen. And it won't be comfortable all the time. This is the main thing. It won't be comfortable. That formula that we always want, that we are so used to have a plan for 3 years or here or there, and it just doesn't work outside the borders until you build some history in that area and see how everything works. We are dealing here with people with no, let's say, Christian background, Lutheran background. They know something, but they are in pain. They don't even know how to address people because they scream. You know, it's not the appropriate way. We will find this. And the main thing here in the gospel is that the beautiful way God ends the story, crowning the story with grace. And don't forget the miracle, you know, she was healed at that same hour. I think it's just, huh? Yeah, her daughter. Yeah. Whoever was sick. Yes. For application, I see that Jesus crosses the border, meets annoying people, deals with insensitive believers, and gives the grace to foreigners. This is Jesus. You can see it here. You can see it in other occasions.
Maybe another weakness of the church presented in the disciples could be their lack of knowing how to relate to the world. I mean, out of sheer courtesy, they could have said, excuse me, what's your name? You know, what's your problem?
They didn't treat women or Canaanite women this way. Yeah.
So but there's no relationship
no.
at all that takes place.
I like the way you framed this very much. There was this fact, I walked out of my congregation any number of times to go down the street a few blocks or up into a restaurant to have lunch or something. The sense that the world is coming to you, asking you for help, is not overwhelming. In fact, quite the opposite. The world much often puts its hand out. And maybe it's because of the attitude. The disciples walked out there not wanting to interact with the world. That's what they took out. That's what they represented, sort of a barrier. Churchianity versus a world that is out there really needing Christ. And on the other hand, Jesus was there as the deacon, the one that grew the woman. And so I like the way you framed it very much, and that you said, take Jesus with you. It's going to be uncomfortable. But like, make it uncomfortable that indeed people are going to come.
Yeah, I guess I think of, I tend to read the disciples pretty tragically in terms of questions of privilege and power. When the border was crossed, disciples had a status of privilege in terms of access to the source of power that the woman was infringing upon. And I think so often those who are privileged either are unaware of just how privileged they are, but I think even especially in places where we've crossed the border, not wanting to relinquish the privilege we have. And we always, or at least I do, it's easy to think of power as a zero-sum game. If I give you power, I lose power. When with Jesus, power is unlimited. So the disciples don't lose anything by the woman's daughter being healed. Actually, everybody gains. So the power is multiplied by the power being extended to people outside the circle, which is counter to the way we tend to think of the power we have as a limited, scarce resource, and so we have to hoard it.
You know, to build off of that too, is something that you had said too about the word goes out. and it crosses borders, and it does things that we are not even aware of. Mm-hmm. And it's like when we get the presupposition that the world is against us, and so when we're out there and people see us and we have this in our mind that they don't want Christ, they're not in need, they're against us. And then we start to be perceived as being, you know, all tied up and not ready to serve or be able to share, whether it be verbally or non-verbally, with the way that we carry ourselves, instead of knowing that, you know what, the word is out there, the word is at work in people who are hurting, and to be open wherever we are, no matter where we're at, that there are opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm. And Helmut Thielicke's exposition of that story, he stresses that the woman had to cross borders or barriers too. The first barrier was she came to Jesus and Jesus said no. But she had to cross that border, God's no. Then she came crying again and Jesus was silent. The barrier of the silence of God. But she crossed that border, or that barrier of the silence of God. And then the third barrier of border, Jesus rejected her. Am I going to take the bread of God's children and throw it to Canaanite dogs like you? And so she had to cross the border of God's supposed rejection. And then Thielicke goes back to Luther and says, what gave her the power to cross those borders? I mean, we have to cross those borders too. The border that separates us from God. Mm-hmm. The no of God, the silence of God, mm-hmm. the rejection of God. And going back to Luther, Thielicke says it was that word that had crossed the border to her. And the word or the gospel that she heard. You can't separate gospel from spirit. So it was the spirit in the word that gave her the power to cross those three borders and not give up and go back to Tyre and Sidon and cry on the beach.
Her attitude was just magnificent. Think about her. Cramps? I don't care. Cramps are great. You're right? I can only give you cramps. I don't care. If they come from God, they must be great, and that's what you have. I mean, yes, her attitude is quite impressive. And maybe we need to learn to read the attitudes of those who are outside our borders. Because we misread them, or we are illiterate. We cannot read what's going on in her attitude. We only see annoying people, when actually there's needy people and there's faith and there's persistence, there's movement toward God. The disciples did not see it. Jesus saw it. He made this all happen so everybody could see it better. And one thing that I'm impressed about it is the border of silence. And, you know, when we are in a mission, when we are pastoring, working in the church, and we don't hear God's responses to our prayers or to the prayers of those we serve, and this silence there, and maybe the first answer is just like one of this, and it's an answer that we don't like, you know, mm-hmm. and be persistent, fall on your knees, it'll happen, even with cramps, it'll be terrific. God's grace will come and change everything. And can't imagine, the Gospels don't say that, but can't imagine the witness that happened after that. There are other stories that tell about this, but going home and find her daughter in good health will produce a witness that was fantastic.
Well, I think in many ways, going back to the silence of God, I mean, this is the experience of all humanity insofar as we all have moments of suffering, but there's something about pronounced, intense, continuous marginality. And many migrants are people who suffer a great deal, and who can identify with God's no, and what they might see as God's apparent rejection or whatever. You know? Why does the righteous suffer? Kind of question. So I think that this is not uncommon to migrants who come across the border, and it's part of the experience of marginality. You know? And what I think is amazing is that many who are in situations like that still sort of have this willingness to not necessarily despair, but to keep going, you know. And I think the woman in some ways, you know, represents a little bit of that kind of spirit that even though you're kind of in the midst of a pretty heavy cross, you can see sort of the light at the end of the tunnel when Jesus
and the church again
is coming. Yeah. The church would keep her in the tunnel sometimes.
And the church against, and you know, she kept going, she kept going.
Well, part of it is, I think, what Travis was saying, that the church at times cannot relate to that experience or does not want to see themselves as people who are also, in many ways, needed. Or not needed, but needy. You know, there is need on both sides of the border. And I think it's only when we lose, it's only when we see ourselves as resourceful and having all the power and not as needy, and as people who need Jesus, that we act this way. And you lose solidarity with those who show need. I mean, this is the example of that I give sometimes is when this statement on immigration came up, the joint statement by the LCMS President's Office and World Relief and Human Care. The way that the statement started was by acknowledging the historical roots of the Missouri Synod in a German immigrant church that fled religious persecution, but also the statement says came to improve the family's economic lot. You know, so there was obviously need at different levels. And that should call us to have a basic kind of sensitivity to the struggles. But I think the statement was put in there because there's kind of a historical amnesia about that stuff. You know, after a while, after you're kind of part of the group, you forget your own immigrant past. You can no longer be in solidarity with people like this. And I think, you know, if the disciples would have been thinking, and if we think sometimes of our own need, you know, our own sin, our own weakness, our own occasions where God did not seem to be around, you know, I think that there could be less of us and more of the neighbor that way. You know? Mm-hmm. But I think this happens to all of us. You know? It's only when we forget how much we need Jesus and we think we already have him down pat that we don't, we're no longer in solidarity with those. You
know? Now from this conversation and from this Bible story, what are the things that we learn or we can learn that apply to our situation today? How do I cross the borders? How do I help my denomination or my congregation or my mission where I am to see the need outside, to see Jesus in the midst of us, working miracles, trusting him, and be willing to cross the borders, whichever those borders are. What are we learning here? What are some points that we can trace down that we are learning on how, you know, good or bad, you know. I know that sometimes my church is like the disciples here. Sometimes, not always, but mm-hmm. sometimes just the disciples, and we feel like the ones that are calling behind us are annoying. It doesn't happen always. It doesn't happen everywhere, but it does happen. What are the things that we learn here, and how can we look for ways that can help us to cross the border with more confidence?
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting is the need was not trivial. The woman's need was really against the kingdom of darkness. Her daughter was demon possessed.
Yes.
And sometimes when we reduce the crossing of the border to, we're going to go out there and we're going to distribute water bottles or something, we don't really understand the stake. You know, what is out there that is a real struggle. And that is the struggle against the kingdom of light and the kingdom of darkness. And that, in many ways, crossing the borders is taking the light into the darkness.
So that will be recognition. I'm trying to formulate it because it is very powerful. It's recognition of situations. We are very light in judging those situations. I know you said it very clearly. Recognition of needs, recognition of the power of the evil in these people.
I think another is we may not always see the dark side, but certainly to learn to look at people who they are, look them in the eye. In other words, even within that uncomfortableness, there is another person in front of us. And somehow a relationship can develop. And let us not, because of our uncomfortableness, be afraid of growing into a relationship.
Mark, thank you. I think this is one of the main issues in our American society, relationship. We hardly have relationship among the people in our churches. I mean, I belong to a church that is 3,000. I have relationship with 5, 6, and the relationship is, you know, Sunday morning and some other days, but gospel is relational. It is relational. So that's why I question those mission trips for 2 weeks or so. You know, you go, you build a house, which is great. I mean, it's needed and it's fantastic, but it's, call it mission, I don't know. I'll call it something else maybe. But it is relational. And here is where Hispanics bring a lot of experience. You know, this is what happens. When you are in the road and you stop because somebody has a flat tire, a Hispanic, and you help him, he becomes your friend for life, right? That's my experience. This is one to build relationship. There's nothing wrong in relationship for us. There's nothing wrong. We love it. We love relationship. And this is what the church is. So I think what you are saying is to learn to stop and start a dialogue that will eventually produce a relationship. We are editing a book about pastoral office, pastoral ministry, and one of the research of the author of the entire New Testament, also Old Testament, about pastor, he comes up with one word, attitude. You know, you can be very well trained theologically, but what will make a difference in your ministry will be your attitude. And this is what we see here. Attitude from the disciples, the one we don't need to have. Attitude from Jesus. Attitude to be open to change your agenda, to go to the beach and just take care of some things that are going on.
Going back to what Eloy said about recognizing the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light, we go back to the woman on her side of the border, and she announces to her neighbors, "I ever heard about Jesus, and I'm going to see Jesus." Probably she got a lot of maybe negative response, saying, "You have to learn to accept God's will. I mean, if your daughter is demon possessed, that's God's will for you. You just have to. That's the way things are. She's predestined to be that way. Things have been pre-programmed. You just, it's part of the system. You can't rebel against the system. You can't go against the way things are because you're going against God's will." And I mean, when people suffer, the woman couldn't say, I'll accept this as God's will for me, because it's not God's will that people are in the hands of the demon. Faith rebels against injustice. God rebels against suffering. We just can't sit by and accept the suffering of people and feel, that's God's will for our world, and we can't change it, so why try?
That reminds me of Job and Job's friends saying, "Well, this is God's will, or you must have done some serious sin." And the Canaanite woman has a New Testament Job who just refuses to let God's silence keep her from just getting to that point where God just says, "Okay, do you know who made the heavens and the earth?"
And this is the second woman that behaves somewhat the same way. The other one that just said, "If I just touch it, that'll be enough."
So the faith was, the word was heard.
Yeah. And
yes.
He's the man. And so much so that if I just touch it. So can you imagine this woman going against all of her culture, in a sense, too?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? They may have said, you have to go visit the witch doctor, or you have to go visit this, or go dump her in the water 3 times and eat this or swallow that. And then here she says, "No, it's just Jesus." And everybody laughing at her on that side, rejecting her, criticizing her, and she's really, really, really all alone.
Well, it's God's will that your daughter is demon possessed because, because you're a mestizo, or you're black, or you're Indian, or you're an illegitimate child, or God is punishing your daughter for something you did, or that your grandparents did, or that your people did, or that your race did, or that your nation did. You're from a people that oppressed God's people, the Jews, in the past. That's God punishing you, and you just have to accept that punishment.
And even if all of that was going on, for me, what warms my heart is that she says, "Have mercy."
And he did.
Have mercy on me. In other words, I'm alone in this. Okay? And maybe here the lesson for all of us is, on whatever side of the border, it's a little more difficult on the other side of the border for the church. But on either side, when you have that loneliness and you have that despair, you can see it in somebody's eye. If we come into a relationship, we will hear it, we will see it. And this is what Jesus saw. And the disciples didn't see it.
Because they were on a different mission. And this is, again, Dr. Krishnick's point in that Bible study. Jesus always kept his focus on the mission. And here he uses, I came for this. Not right now, but okay. And so he advanced a little bit his mission toward this woman because it was a divine appointment with that. I'll put it this way. Think why Matthew or God had Matthew write this portion. What is so unique about this? What do we learn from from this portion, this entire portion about, I don't want to say it because I'm going to answer if I say it. Mm-hmm. One thing that we learn here, besides everything else that we said,
seems like it's illustrating, it's talking about the thing that we don't want to talk about, or the things that we don't really talk about, and that is the borders that we have with other people, the things that, that get between us and with our neighbor. Just too easy to not look at that, to not think about it, to not recognize it, to let it be there. And then find other ways of reaching out to people who are pleasant to us or like us.
Thank you.
I also think, you know, that if you look at chapter 15 of Matthew as a whole, that you know, this is in there, and God and Jesus is talking throughout chapter 15 about breaking borders left and right. You know, he talks about the Pharisees come and ask, well, why don't your disciples follow this this tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands when they eat. And Jesus goes on to tell them about what it really means to have a tradition in God. Or then, you know, they would always say, well, this defile, you're defiled because you ate pork, or you ate this, or you ate that. Once again, Jesus says, no, you know, this is what makes somebody defiled according to God, this and that. You know, once again, just break, and you see it throughout all the Gospels of where he crosses the border and disturbs the thought process of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and shows them once again, you know, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath, I am God, this is what it means, not how you take it, but you know, this is how it's supposed to be.
Another interesting thought is we've got several parables in the Gospels where Jesus teaches about sort of in the along the lines of prayer, to continue to pray, to be insistent. So you have the man who goes to the neighbor to ask for bread because he receives company in the middle of the night and doesn't have anything to give, and keeps asking for it and asking for it, and finally the man responds. Or the woman who goes to the judge asking for justice and just keeps repeating the petition over and over until the judge relents and does justice. But now you have a sort of a similar thing. You have a woman being very persistent, asking for God, but it's not one of the disciples. It's not one of the kingdom women. It's a stranger. So the universality of God's mercy and truth. When you come to God and you ask for mercy, and God grants you mercy, whether you're one of the privileged in the nation or one of the ones on the other side of the border.
Thank you, Eloy, and you for your comments. In the liturgy of the church, this passage is linked to Isaiah 56. All the nations will come in Psalm 66. All the nations, because here we are going to all the nations. One of the main things that I learned here, there are two things that I really stress for me, is first of all, God addresses real situations. He comes with a word of grace, but he heals. He is in the midst of our suffering. He is in the midst of a real life situation. Read the Gospels. It's all about this. It's all about Jesus encountering people in different real life situations. And that hasn't changed. God still comes to us and goes with us to change the situation of the life of people, whatever that is. And the other thing that I learned from that woman is the suffering. Again, I was editing a book, Pastoral Care, and one of the main points of the book that really struck me was God has a purpose in suffering. For this woman, suffering was a starting point to bring her to Jesus. So I bet she praised God for the healing, but also for what happened to her before the healing, because because of this situation, she had the chance to come to know Jesus. This is for us to know what happens outside our borders, those really bad situations that we are called to address are there because it is the power of the evil one making struggle the people of God, but they are also there so God can have an opportunity to heal that heart. So we cannot overlook that, just say, no, this is just too much for me, I cannot handle it, it's annoying, it's uncomfortable, it's way too much for me. Jesus is with us in our trip, and we cross the border with him, and we will encounter many things, but he is the one with the power and the serenity to lead us. I think, I don't know if there is time for any final comments. You can do your own application to our LCMS mission work. How do we handle that? As long as we are conscious that we understand where we are as disciples, as believers, in which part of the border, how many times we cross it, as long as we understand this dynamic, it will be much easier for us to go away of the formula that everybody wants and create one that would work for one day, and then we need to create another one for the next day, because it will be different.
I think one of the difficulties, I think in general, is simply that suffering is not very pleasant. And so when you deal with people who have gone through a great deal of suffering, and you become associated with them and you try to reach out to them. I mean, the tendency is not to want to sometimes do that, because that means that now you have to carry across to, you know, you have to kind of bear that and accompany the one who's suffering. And that's just very tough, you know. So I think that typically, one of the things that I've learned through your leading us in this devotion is that it's just difficult to die to self sometimes in order to make room for the neighbor. You know, and I think the disciples probably understood that things were not going to be the same if we open ourselves up to this woman.
and that's the good part. That's good part. When we cross the border, this is like a final call. When we cross the border, and hopefully our entire church will understand it someday, when we cross the border, it's never boring. It is never boring. It's always exciting. It's always surprising. We just need to be ready for all the surprises, the divine appointments that God is setting for us every time we step outside our comfort zone. I mean, those are opportunities for us. Those are the privileges that we have, those who carry Jesus in us.
Well, I want to thank you for your time with us
today,
and I thank you all for coming too. Let's thank our presenter.
My privilege. Thank you all.